What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode features Dr. Alexander King. Dr. King is an osteopathic manipulative medicine specialist and also certified in acupuncture. Dr. King is often on the sidelines taking care of athletes and keeping them healthy and in the game, or in the gym himself working towards his own fitness goals. He has a very cosmic and spiritual approach to his practice and is passionate about improving both his patients and himself. He is also a talented artist and lover of fashion. Check out this episode as we discuss philosophy of medicine, various approaches to fitness, and what being osteopathic physicians means to us. I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please share the episode with others. Follow us on Instagram at Our Lives in Medicine and like and rate us on Apple iTunes. You have no idea how much it helps and how much we really appreciate it. And as always, if you need some good beats to study, or get some work done, or just catch some good vibes, check the intro and outro for the lo-fi beats, and look at the show notes for the artist shoutouts. I hope you have a great one, and as always, thank you so much for being a part of Our Lives in Medicine. Live with Dr. King. How's everything going today?
Everything is great. Super busy today, but just getting back home and excited to start. I start private practice on Monday, so it's ramping up.
Oh man, what are you doing in the meantime?
So in the meantime, just a lot of kind of admin work, getting my malpractice set up, doing a lot of marketing. I've got a bunch of new patients actually just first day, so just looking forward to meeting all my patients and just starting to hit the ground running. So it's good.
So you finished residency, what, pretty recently, right?
So I graduated about a week ago, but technically since COVID kind of extended things, they added a week on. So I finished residency Friday and I start my attending job Monday. So oof. Pretty rapid.
Yeah, that's a quick turnaround. You excited
though? Yeah. I mean, I am very excited, and I was asked if I wanted any break time, but to be honest, I was like, let's just get it going. So I kind of chose the expedited route because there's a lot of people out there who I know wanted some treatment, and I wanted to fit in as soon as possible. So luckily, you know, in being with the practice the last couple months of residency, I was getting to know the patient population, a lot of my prior patients who want further treatment privately. So I had a good kind of patient flow, so to speak, just initially that I wanted to take advantage of. So kind of opted for the expedited route.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, I mean, Plus with Corona going on, I guess I was going to say you might have had a lot of downtime. You're ready to start, but you were still in residency, so you were still grinding the whole time.
Somewhat. Luckily, in the field I'm in, since it's so close contact, although not deemed essential, like it's not an inpatient necessarily, our clinic was closed for like 2 months. So, and it actually still closed. What happened was during those 2 months, I was just kind of doing didactics, keeping up with journal readings, making lectures. So not as much clinical, almost all academic. I'm also involved in two research projects, so I was keeping up with that. But then after those initial 2 months, so like March, March, April, May, and then after I began to transition to my actual current office where I was getting training the last 2 months of residency to transition into my actual job, which worked out really well, which a lot of people don't get to do. So it was a nice kind of slow ramp up, but I definitely felt kind of well rested and had a kind of a mini vacation, so to speak. So yeah, all in all, things happen and you just gotta adapt. But luckily for me, unlike many physicians out there who are on the front lines, I wasn't necessarily seeing or combating this pandemic too directly. So yeah, so I now feel ready and comfortable to just get back into it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you said you were doing research. Can you, I don't know if you can talk about it or not, but what was kind of that project that you were working on?
Sure. So one is actually more of a case report where I was doing some research for osteopathic manipulation and the effects on chronic asthmatic patients. So really mobilizing the rib cage, getting their biomechanics optimized. And what happened was there was a really interesting case. Someone had a laryngospasm or spasmodic dysphonia. So their vocal cords tightened up after spirometry and their voice is affected, for the next 8 hours. And this has been in their history for a while. So, unfortunate that it happened, but as I was treating them with the OMM protocol, their voice and their vocal tone and everything normalized within like 5 minutes, which is pretty unheard of in terms of that dysfunction. The main treatment is Botox injections to the vocal cords, so obviously very uncomfortable. And the thing I was doing was just these manual osteopathic techniques, targeting the sympathetic innervation to the vocal cords, almost kind of serendipitously. Like I wasn't meaning to do that. It was just a part of the protocol I was testing, but it solved that case. So we're going to publish that case. And then the other research I'm working on is testing the Hypervolt percussion hammer or the massage vibration device made by Hyperice. I'm one of their affiliates and I do research for them. So we're testing it on the shoulder protocol for athletes and increasing range of motion. So those are the two kind of things I've been working on and both hopefully will be published this year.
That's awesome. Yeah. And your practice is sports med, right? So that'll really kind of be something you can test and be super beneficial to your patients, I would assume.
Yeah, we do integrative sports medicine. So everything from vibration therapy to regenerative injections to medical acupuncture, osteopathy. We do pretty much everything and have made this unique treatment regimen for our pro D1 high school and even just regular weekend warrior athletes. And so I like to, use all these different modalities because I think when you stack all these modalities, something sticks and they work in a synergistic way and you get really good healing with that. So
Yeah, that's awesome. And it, like you said, working so many different angles, and you know so many different angles, so that's really beneficial as well. You can kind of like the technology modalities and then obviously the hands-on modalities from your OMM training. That's awesome.
yeah, the way I look at it, medicine as kind of an anthropological study in terms of, what was the first medicine, right? So in terms of our evolution, in my perspective, it was probably some form of manual medicine or manual healing, along with some herbal probably remedies there. Then probably acupuncture started to come around with, using shaved down pieces of bone and bamboo and trying to experiment and target the areas of the skin, which, is very sympathetically innervated. And that stuff has been done for 5,000 years or many, many thousands of years. So I kind of mixed the latest modalities as well. So we're talking like PRP, for example, or platelet-rich plasma injections. So the regenerative plus the energetic ancient medicine, but with the modern education and anatomical knowledge that was given, to me by our Western medical education. So, really a mix of this Eastern Western approach I found works really well for just about any case and patient. So I'm almost like a specialist in the human as a whole. I kind of know a little bit about, just about everything from various skin conditions to gut dysbiosis to Musculoskeletal, obviously, which is probably my strongest suit. But, you know, I try to keep in mind a range of pathologies and, you know, how I could possibly make some kind of impact using these somewhat ancient techniques, but also modern ones too. So I like the mix.
Do you find yourself kind of leaning on one versus the other, kind of like the East versus West, or modern versus ancient, or you kind of just whatever you think is best suited for the patient?
Yeah, for me, it's totally about the patient, right? So certain people, you know, might be very needle phobic, so the acupuncture and injections won't be a thing, but they might really love the manual modalities, like osteopathy and all these other kind of manual techniques. Some people don't mind needles at all, and they just want really quick results. Like a lot of the pro athletes gravitate more towards, let's just get it done. You know, it might be a little bit uncomfortable, but you know, it'll provide me the greatest performance benefit. And some patients too don't even know like what they like or dislike. They just kind of want to try different things and see how their body responds. And yeah, so it's, you know, a nice mixture, and I like to try and find what's best for the individual. 'Cause again, the way, you know, I was taught as a DO is, you know, the human is mind, body, and spirit. It's not just their body or their disease that you're trying to fix. It's their health that you're trying to find. And I think that is much more of an art form, much harder in a lot of ways, because it's a lot about finesse and also keeping in mind, like, this person at this time, not this person just in their whole life, because everyone's always changing at every hour, every day, every week, and you kind of have to meet them at that moment when you're treating them to figure out, okay, what is the best for this patient in this moment for their both immediate goal and for their long-term goal, and what are they comfortable with? What's their boundary? And they might consciously know this, they might not even consciously know it. You kind of have to know as the practitioner, where do you draw that line for your patient sometimes. So I'm always checking in with them, like, hey, are you comfortable with this, or how's your pain level, or you know, we could try this newer modality maybe next treatment. So it's always this dialogue, and again, it gets back to your patient as a participant in their healthcare, because really, I'm just opening the door for that healing to occur, and it's their body that's making the change. I don't really make stuff happen. I let them happen as they kind of unwind for the person, based on the modality. So it gets kind of complex, a lot of different factors, but yeah, I like the individual approach.
Absolutely. That's all. I mean, that's a really good just way of thinking. Obviously, I have a limited experience as a brand new resident, but it sounds like that's just kind of the way to go because you're looking out for the patient. You have as many tools in your bucket as you can, but you use the ones that you think will work and kind of adjust and go along. You kind of hear about those stories where it's like, this has to work. This is the only option, and there's nothing else they can do if they don't if that one treatment doesn't work. So it's good to have as many, diverse tools as possible for sure.
Yeah, and what's crazy too is, you know, I'm more of on the artistic perspective when I'm looking at medicine, and a lot of students and residents who are going into the medical field almost don't realize their potential, and kind of relegate themselves to the, you know, standard of practice evidence-based medicine. But what is like your superpower that you bring to the table, right? It might not even be like manual skill. It might be your way of communicating. It might be your way of relating to the patient. It might be your way of advocating for them, or just thinking of all these other complexities that can arise with their disease process. So for me, I just kind of found it early. I knew I wanted to work with my hands based on my background and just cultivated that. But certainly for other people, you know, you kind of have to explore what is your unique perspective and your unique talent that you can bring to the table in the art of this healing process, right? That to me is something that is not quite as emphasized in school, just because we're so inundated with information and busy doing clinical rounds and all these things we have to take care of. But it's almost like I think a lot about the underlying philosophy of like, what are we doing here, and how are we actually helping other human beings, not just necessarily throwing in ICD-10 code and writing a script, right? So there's this philosophical kind of void that I'm trying to bring more light to as well.
Absolutely. That's great. And You said something a second ago, kind of you said based on your background, I kind of wanted to get into that as well. I remember when we talked, you were saying that your grandfather was an acupuncturist and you kind of did your acupuncture fellowship during residency. Can you kind of talk about, just your training and experience with acupuncture?
Yeah, so, growing up, my mom mentioned that, my grandfather treated her for her, for instance, like one story she always talks about is like her knee problem in her med school days. She's like, all of a sudden my knee got really, swollen and it was really painful. But literally one time, one treatment with acupuncture, a couple needles well placed, took care of that issue immediately and never came back. And that always stuck with me. I was like, whoa, like you don't really see that too often with, kind of typical treatment, so to speak. And it really sparked my curiosity because I was like, this is in my family. Like, I truly believe in the phenomenon of epigenetics, and I can almost feel when I'm treating and making that really deep level connection within myself and passing that energy on to my patient, that kind of like innate knowledge, so to speak. I just kind of like let it speak for itself and just go with it. But really, he was a great practitioner, really well known in Korea for like 50 years, and then LA in acupuncture and herbalism, which I always kind of gravitated towards, like the more quote unquote natural kind of modalities of letting the body kind of heal it on its own via energy. Like I'm really into energy and physics, so I think a lot about quantum physics, quantum mechanics, like energy affecting the body as a bioelectrical field, these kind of nuanced things that might seem kind of like weird right now, but I think are going to be the future of medicine. But anyway, for the acupuncture perspective, I really saw that clinically being used since, my grandfather passed when I was young. I never really got to see it or get treated. But as a third year student, I've heard of this doctor, this local guy who's one of my earlier mentors, Dr. Hart, doing OMM plus acupuncture in Philly, and got the fortunate opportunity to be with him for a few months, and was just like pretty amazed by the results he was getting and the way he could read the patient, not just kind of musculoskeletally, but psychosomatically, emotionally, how all of the intricacies of their conscious experience connects with their physical body experience and how that manifests in disease. I was just like, this speaks to me on a very deep level. So from there, I was just picking his brain, like, hey, what residency did you do? When did you do fellowship? What fellowship did you do? And fortunately, he was actually one of the teachers for the Helms acupuncture course. So he's like, I took Helms, during my residency. I recommend you do the same because it's a little bit cheaper for residents. And I went to the PCOM OMM residency, and I was like, all right, well, if that's what you did, that's what I want to do too. So I just kind of followed in those steps and applied to the OMM residency, and luckily got into the HMI or Helms Institute medical acupuncture program during my second year. And you have to apply to get in. You have to have an essay and write, what you plan to use acupuncture for. And in joining the class, I was actually the only resident, and it was kind of intimidating, not gonna lie, to be with like all these really experienced attendings from anesthesia, physiatry, family med, psychiatry, even all of these experienced people in the class. But what's cool is like everyone was kind of on this first name basis, and you have to palpate each other and use each other as these teaching tools, and you really get to know everyone really well and are comfortable, and it's this really familial, like community kind of learning environment that I loved. So I did that my second year residency, and luckily my third year, my last year, I got to practice acupuncture for a year in residency as with Dr. Levin, who's one of our attendings at the school as my preceptor, because he had taken the Helms course a few years prior as well. So I think I had a very unique training experience in that I was able to do my fellowship kind of during residency in acupuncture and then also use it during my training. And I've now kind of refined my own style because everyone's got a different style since it's really a art form of medicine. So that was kind of my like acupuncture journey.
Well, that's pretty awesome, but honestly, I don't know if you're like a madman or a genius, like who's like, oh, residency's tough enough, but I'll do a fellowship during. That's
Yeah,
pretty.
to be honest, like it was overwhelming for sure. It's 6 months, three. I used all of my like sick days, vacation days to go to the clinical sessions because they're on the weekends and some of the weekdays. So I drove down to Potomac, Maryland. There were 3 5-day sessions, and one in March, one in June, and one in September, which was the graduating one. And then 300 hours of self-study videos. So like I would get home after residency, bring out the laptop, watch a few hours of videos, do notes. And then I would also be practicing like my points, not only on, my, who I'm very thankful for, my friends and family, but also on myself, which was kind of unnerving to practice needling yourself. But they say
Yeah.
if you can needle yourself, you can needle anybody. So that's how I kind of learned. So yeah, I was kind of crazy, but looking back, I would have done it all over again the same way.
Yeah, I mean, because now you graduated and you're all done. There's no more extra time. It's just now it's time to get into it. That's awesome. I mean,
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
that's pretty cool. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I like that. That's a I I've it's just such a cool. I've had it done a couple of times. So like one of my classmates in med school, she went to acupuncture school before med school. She ran a clinic
Oh,
out in
nice. Wow.
California, and so she's the only person I've ever had acupuncture from, and that's like the only one I would
Oh,
trust at
cool.
this point. I would trust you, but
I
but
appreciate
if.
that. I mean, it's not as bad as people think. The needles are long and look kind of scary, but to be honest, you put them in and barely feel them, and you just kind
Yeah.
of feel this achy, dull achiness. But I love it. Like I acupuncture myself if I have an injury. Like at a certain point, you kind of get used to it.
I loved it, and I have just kind of just chronic, not pain, but more just fatigue,
Discomfort.
soreness.
Yeah.
Yeah, from just like
Fatigue.
the
Yeah.
years of lifting and sports and
Oh
stuff,
yeah, of
but
course. What it's great at is targeting your parasympathetic and calming down your sympathetic nervous system. So it's really like I look at acupuncture as an autonomic medication. So if you're dysautonomic and if you're having chronic fatigue and energy imbalance and, myofascial restrictions, I mean it's the perfect thing for it because it's very subtle but effective. You can augment it with electricity if you want to. It's well tolerated, pretty much zero side effects unless you puncture someone's lung, which of course you avoid. But really, it's like I love it, so I can't speak highly enough of it as a modality.
Well, let me ask you one question then. So, what is the difference between acupuncture and dry needling?
So the difference is, I'm trying to think of a great example. Dry needling, it might use an acupuncture needle, sometimes maybe even a hypodermic cutting needle, which is like the typical one you get with like a flu shot, but it's a singular needle directed at like a tender point or trigger point in the typically muscular tissue that you kind of peck at that area singularly. You might get a fasciculation or a muscle twitch, and then you're done. So you kind of just reset the muscle spindle and you let that muscle diffuse out. And so it's a very localized treatment for like a trigger point, so to speak. And I believe in a lot of states, physical therapists can even do it. I don't think they can in Pennsylvania, but it's kind of like it's like one of the most basic foundational needling techniques without any injection. But acupuncture, it's almost like just learning kind of to play some notes on the violin, and then acupuncture is almost like conducting a full orchestra to play a piece, right? So you're kind of breaking it down from one component, right, which is the dry needling, but then acupuncture is like this creating an energetic conduction throughout a system by connecting electrodes along that system. So each needle being that kind of point of conductance that if you leave it in the ionic fluid of the body, it will pass electrons from one to the other. And that what that does on a physiologic level is releases these natural endorphins and enkephalins and endogenous opioids we have, and you get that endorphin rush afterwards if you have a good treatment. So dry needling is like the first kind of smallest therapeutic effect you can have, and then good level acupuncture is like a whole nother kind of energetic treatment.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can speak only from my personal experience with the two, but I felt like the dry needling was more, find a tenor point and kind of just blast it. And that, you might get the fasciculation, but that really does help kind of just relax the muscle belly, the body of the muscle. But then the acupuncture was just such a deeper stimulation, and it's held for, it was like 30, 45 minutes. Yeah. And that's just so much time for your body to kind of freak out and then just neutralize and say, okay, there's a needle sticking in this muscle belly, but it is what it is. Let's just calm down. And that kind of spreads throughout. And I love it. I love them both, obviously. But
it's we call that cool. dispersion. So if someone's in a really yang state or in a really acute flared up state, you put a needle in it and then you let it disperse heat or energy out of the needle, out of the body, right? So it's literally like an energetic release, so to speak. So if you have a lot of internal tension, and you're very yang or you're very hyped up, because it's yin and yang via Chinese medicine, so you need to disperse that energy, right? So that's one aspect. And then if you have a chronic injury or energy deficient and you're very yin on the yin side, you need more added kind of electricity. So that's where electroacupuncture comes in, where you add some tonification to the needle, and you can even do it using herbs such as moxa, and like adding heat to the needle via heat lamp or this moxibustion or burning of the herb near the needle. So it's again learning to read energy and then learning to treat with energy.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I love that. It's like really, it sounds like a really just fun modality to add to everything else. It's awesome. So
yeah, like I don't feel like I work, to be honest. Like I just have fun. I see each patient as their own almost like art piece or puzzle, in a way that I can get to know them and get that kind of bond between us, really. A lot of my patients have become really close friends of mine too, and I really value that relationship, and it's very therapeutic as well. And patients teach me stuff every day, so I'm almost grateful to them for teaching me things and allowing me to have the honor of treating them, to be honest. Like I just view myself as a servant who likes to work with needles and his hands and can help people. And to me, it's like not even really work. It's just, I'm truly blessed to be doing it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you said you were able to use the acupuncture during residency. What were some, maybe not necessarily acupuncture cases, but just what is kind of a typical case, like, typical cases you see as an OMM resident?
Yeah, so I think big ones that we get, because OMM often is not the first line that people find for their issues, right? It's very unknown, so to speak, and people often are at the end of their line when they see us, right? They're like, I've seen three neurologists, I've seen an ortho surgeon, I don't want surgery, but I'm having this pain, what do I do? We get a lot of really kind of these very difficult cases where it's like not labeled necessarily, but it's just kind of, they just were given the fibromyalgia label, for example, or you have, myofascial pain syndrome or all these things where the person's like, I'm fatigued all the time. I get headaches, my joints ache, like no pills help. I'm very sensitive to medication. I don't want to take medication. Like, please help me. And so we see a lot of these cases, and to me, it's a manifestation of a lot of different things. So not just their body, but also the environment they might be in. Their diet plays a huge role. Their autonomic nervous system is taxed. It can't generate that innate healing. Their sleep is off, which is another huge component of healing. So the modern world we live in, it's great in a lot of ways, but it's also very taxing on our autonomic system. We evolved to live in, very kind of small tribes, relatively speaking, out in nature. And now that we're not doing that as much, all of our systems are kind of like, what is going on? And so we see a lot of tough cases, a lot of tough neurological cases like RSD or chronic regional pain syndrome, CRPS as well. But I've totally tried to bring in the acupuncture approach to people that are willing, and more often than not, it's helped.
Yeah, I bet. And even with the, I'm sure with athletes as well, I'm sure they love like the soft tissue, the HVLA, everything like that. I mean, I know I do, so I'm sure they do too, but.
Oh yeah. That's like bread and butter stuff. I feel like everyone loves that too. So it's always good to do.
Yeah. And like you said, though, the patients that kind of come into you last line, like just want some relief. Even I found kind of with chronic pain patients, even just getting them from a 10 out of 10 to like a 7 is such a huge improvement. And that's such a big win for them. You know, you might never get them down to a 0, but going from 10 to 7 is like such an improvement of quality of life. And it was in your hands. That's awesome, you know?
Yeah, I try and set realistic expectations too, and I'm always like, what is your goal? And what is my goal, and how can we, make those match up as well as we can and even exceed expectations in a lot of ways. So a good example is this past week I treated a really tough case, 35-year-old female, history of two brain surgeries. So first one at 4 years old, second one, when she was 27 for an AVM that recurred. And it was in kind of the left temporal parietal lobe, and unfortunately lost her right peripheral vision, therefore unable to drive. She also had history of chronic headaches after the surgery, from which she was told it wasn't surgically related, and that she would have to just kind of manage it for the rest of her life, right? So when I saw her case, I was like, okay, so let's set some realistic expectations. She was having headaches every day, starting in the morning, eventually getting a little bit better by the evening, and then go to sleep, wake up with a headache again. So the cyclical pattern, it was not migrainous in nature. So that was a big thing for me. It was like, no ocular involvement, no photophobia, no changes in sense of smell, nothing kind of migrainy. But what I said to her was like, well, I definitely think we can break this headache cycle, right? That's like my first step with you. And she was like, awesome, that's mine as well. They're getting really limiting for my life. And I said, well, also your peripheral vision is very important, not just for safety, but like if you ever want the possibility of driving, which is a huge thing in terms of your autonomy and freedom, which again is spirit related, if I'm thinking in that regard, right? Lifestyle. That's something I would want for you. And she's like, well, they told me I'd never get it. And I said, well, that's their perspective, right? I respect them as neurosurgeons. They did a great job for you. They saved your life. But I'm kind of the guy you see who thinks outside the box and also sees that the box isn't even there to begin with. So let's just treat you, see how you feel. I'm going to do my best to try and maximize the treatment and see what happens. And maybe even, give you some hope that you might get some of that peripheral vision back and be able to drive again. So with her, I, was like, did anyone even treat your surgical scar? Did anyone do cranial osteopathy for you? Did anyone do this, that, and the other? She was like, well, I never even heard those words before, so definitely not, right? So,
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, so I take this like very different kind of view of the patient and what's so we treated the scar, and before we had measured her peripheral vision because her friend was there to buy. Because I was like, just for kicks, like I don't think we'll get anything back like on the first try, but just want to see. So I treated everything, and then when we rechecked at the end, she ended up getting about 5 inches of peripheral vision back on her upper right hemisphere of her vision, which is pretty crazy. Like I was not expecting that. And then her headaches also went away, and as far as I know, since last week, she hasn't had one since then. And she also had a glass of wine, and it's like every time I have wine, I get a headache, but that hasn't happened at all. So all in all, set the expectation, but I try and surpass it. And it was a tough case too, because she was told she'd never get that vision back. But just applying what I know and my philosophy, I got a little bit back. So hopefully I'll continue to work on it and we can get even more back and maybe she'll be able to drive again. So that was another recent tough case that I did.
That's sweet though. Yeah, I like that. That's awesome. I'm sure that's so rewarding too. Like you said, you don't really work. You get to go do stuff. You know, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm just happy that they're willing to let me try, because sacrificing giving up your body to someone is like takes a lot of trust.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, that is exactly what you're doing. You're laying on a table exposed and you're like, all right, well, I hope this works.
Yep,
So.
you just kind of lay there with your arms open and you're just like, I hope this guy knows what he's doing. But
Yeah,
that
exactly.
I take it so seriously because I've been there, I've been treated, and you really are just letting someone kind of impart their art form on you, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about OMM and, you know, osteopathic manipulative medicine. For people who have no idea what that means, could you maybe just give a brief synopsis of that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So osteopathic manipulative medicine is really the first form of osteopathic medicine founded by A.T. Still in the mid-1800s. And he created, DO schools across, the Midwest and then which spread to the rest of the country. But it truly is the manual medical treatment of somatic dysfunction in the body, meaning anything from any kind of restriction of certain ranges of motion in certain joints or pain in certain areas, imbalances in the body. And osteopathic manipulation utilizes various techniques. And a lot of techniques are either very old, some are much newer. But it really is up to the practitioner which ones they like to use the most and which ones they think are best for the patient at that time. So again, very similar to acupuncture in that there's no real algorithm. It's like a true art form and it's in its own right because you have to use your clinical judgment, knowledge, and manual skill to enact the best treatment for that person. So, we do a lot of things that overlap. I get with chiropractic treatment, I get that question all the time, like, how is it different than a chiropractor? Well, there it's like a Venn diagram where the center is high velocity, low amplitude thrusting or HVLA, right? Where you mobilize the joint and make that popping or clicking sound. But also we have this other component of our, full medical training. So we're not going to miss anything medically, so to speak. And also just these newer modalities like osteopathic cranial manipulation, not newer, but kind of nuanced, I guess the better word, or more specialized, as well as other things that are even used in the training realm, like muscle energy is used, commonly in PT and all these other soft tissue techniques. So it's kind of like a mesh of, really, I say it's like any manual technique that can be done to the body, an OMM specialist can probably do it. So that's how I think about it.
Okay, sweet. Yeah, that's a good, that's definitely a good description for the non-initiated. So that's
yeah.
Cool. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. So what about, you in the future as a practitioner? You're going to start your near future, like on Monday, but like, 10 years down the road, what do you kind of envision for yourself?
It's, it's a great question. I definitely want to try to get into more stem cell injection therapy because I really see that as the future, like regrowing these injured tissues, I think is going to be huge. That's the kind of route I've been starting on with prolotherapy or proliferative therapy plus PRP or platelet-rich plasma. It's kind of like in that same cascade. So I think regenerative medicine is where I'm going to go, but also combining that with energy or energetic medicine. And I think even, even past me, maybe, or 100 years from now, we're going to get more into quantum medicine, which I think is just in its infancy now with detecting, bioelectrical field work and all this stuff that sounds kind of ridiculous now. But in 100 years, I think would be very common space nonsense, have like an energetic profile and you could see, deficiencies. Who knows what kind of detect that, but I just think the science has to catch up on that a little bit. And so yeah, that's what I think for me in the future. And of course I'll always have my osteopathic foundation. Things are built on foundational knowledge and then expanded upon, so I'd like to have that foundation always. And I'm always looking at anatomy, but on these regenerative medicine techniques along my acupuncture practice. So
yeah, absolutely. So I caught 99% of that, but it did cut out for like one little part. So yeah, the next question I kind of wanted to ask, we kind of hit a lot of the medical side. What about the non-medical side of you? So what do you kind of do for fun, just hobbies and things like that?
Oh yeah, so I guess it depends on the season because I'm a big snowboarder, so if there's snow I'm trying to go out there. But really, I'm really big into fitness and training. That's just always been my passion and optimal performance. I use myself as somewhat of an experiment sometimes with like diet and training. So I did like bodybuilding style stuff for, throughout college and med school, but now I'm more at a stage where I'm trying to push my adaptive capacity to training. So like I'm doing more like sled pushes, sandbag work, trampoline work, like weight vest work. So just trying to push it in terms of that. And then I'm also a huge artist, so I love painting. That's what I do a lot of nowadays. And I also do commissions for art. I've done gallery shows. That'll always be a part of who I am and what I do. And so, yeah, I kind of do a lot of various things, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah.
So yeah, talking about fitness, you're one of the first people I've talked to who also likes to use a vest for like running and stuff. I love my weighted vest. I love it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, not just even running, but like I'll wear it when I deadlift. I'll wear it when I'm doing pull-ups. I'll wear it on the trampoline. I also weigh down. I wear ankle weights and sometimes arm weights. So, my view is that if you can just add weight to your normal, system, in a way that's kind of conforms to your mechanics, it's probably just going to be a better distribution on your joints and ligaments and everything, rather than adding like a weird tension frame on the system. So that's just kind of my view of why I do it. And it's almost like, in Dragon Ball Z when he trains in like the 5G like pod. It's pretty much the same thing, right? You're just adding more resistance to gravity on your frame, skeletal frame. So just kind of think of it that way, so to speak. Yeah.
I pretty much picture myself as Piccolo when I throw my vest on,
Yeah, pretty much, right?
Piccolo,
He wore that vest.
The unsung only black guy on Dragon Ball Z, besides I
Yeah,
guess
right.
Mr.
Yeah,
Popo, but
exactly.
that wasn't the best representation.
I
So
would agree with that. Yeah,
that's
true.
funny. So yeah, that's pretty
Yeah.
cool, man. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of I once the gym I'm in North Carolina, and so the gyms here still haven't opened back up, but I've been doing a lot of weighted vest stuff, and I have an assault air bike, so that kills me every day. But
Ooh, that thing
yeah,
is brutal.
it's the worst. I do it every day, and it's still not 1% easier. It's like the worst.
Yeah, that kills me. Like my like chest hurts from just like how intense it gets.
Yeah, but it's good, man. It's fun. So I
Yeah.
totally agree, man. Like fitness, keeping yourself fit, and it kind of keeps you young in the same sense. Like I'm not sure what your parents are like, but like my dad, he's 60, and we still work out together. So it's like kind of
Oh,
like a lot.
that's awesome.
Yeah, like a lifelong thing. I mean, he doesn't do like, sets of, heavy fives or anything anymore, but what he'll
Yeah.
do is he'll throw like a buck 35 on the bench and do like four sets of 35 or 40, and I
That's
can't do that.
crazy.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
can't
that's
do that,
insane.
man.
My
Yeah,
I
so
so I view it, my body is my tool, so I need to be my sharp my scalpel needs to be sharp, right? So if you're a surgeon, you only use sharp scalpels. Well, if you're, a manual medicine specialist, or if you're using your body to treat people, you also should be sharp, right? So that's kind of how I look at it. So my diet is pretty clean. Like, I'm actually doing a circadian rhythm based diet right now. So that's another mini experiment that I do on myself, but
what does
it's
that
working out
entail?
well. So yeah, so it's by StrongFit. I'm a big fan of their podcast. You probably like it if you start listening to it. But there are these guys out of the Netherlands. It's Julien Pinot and Tyler Stone. So Tyler Stone's an American guy. Julien Pinot is a French guy who they're both really great coaches and strength trainers. But they found this protocol that optimizes the autonomic nervous system. So what you do is you just eat fats during the day, mainly get most of your stuff from fats, but it's not keto because you have all of your carbs around training session. However, you can still actually, if your training sessions are intense enough, you can still maintain relative ketosis by eating like 70 grams of carbs or something, which is insane for keto because that breaks the rule. However, if you're burning it so fast that your body can't use it as storage or anything, then you can stay in ketosis. But anyway, so fats during the day, carbs during training, protein at nighttime. So I eat like two or three big protein meals after my training session, spaced out a little bit, but I'll get, 45 to 50 grams within each of those meals. And there's always that kind of rule where it's like, oh, you can't digest that much protein at once, yada yada, but if your autonomics are so optimized by the rest of your diet, then you actually can digest a lot more than you would think, and in a more efficient manner, in a more high yield manner. And you know, they say macros are kind of BS because none of these macro systems, where you're counting macros or what have you, account for your digestive capability based on your autonomic nervous system at that moment. So if you're chronically inflamed, you're chronically stressed, have poor digestive capacity, and are following these macros, well, obviously your macros aren't going to mean the same thing as someone who's following the exact same number, but who has less stress, more sleep, better parasympathetic tone, and all that. So I've really changed my view of diet as a weight management and or aesthetic kind of tool, but to more of a neurological system tool to optimize everything about your neurology or your neurological system from your autonomic system perspective. So it really, the goal is to optimize sleep. So when you eat that much protein at night, you're going to just pass out and sleep like a baby and have pretty vivid dreams, which I think is a good indicator of sleep quality. So that's kind of like what I've been doing the last few weeks, and it's been working really well.
Sweet. Yeah. And you know, that makes a good point. You know, those rumors, the bro science of like, you can only digest like 35, 40 grams, but that, even if that was based on a scientific study, that study probably came from a either general population, which may have a lot slower metabolism than like the more athletic population too. So yeah, it's mm-hmm. And like you said, like hypermetabolizing it from a workout and then making the carbs scarce anyway, it's a really good combination. That's a pretty sweet diet, and I'm definitely gonna check that podcast out.
Yeah, they're really great guys. I'm actually gonna talk to them about osteopathic medicine, because they have a lot of theories about how internal versus external rotation and internal external torque is also equivalent to, you know, firing of sympathetics versus parasympathetics. So think internal rotation equals parasympathetic, external is sympathetic. And if you think of the way you open up the body, when you externally rotate everything, you're like, it's like the biggest expression you can have, right? Both emotionally, what do people do? They throw their hands up, you know, shoulder extension, and kind of just like, they're just expanding everything. And then when you are trying to heal, or, you know, going parasympathetic, you curl into a ball. And so they view, and so what I was thinking is, you know, craniosacrally, flexion, external rotation, sympathetic, extension of the CRI, you get internal rotation, parasympathetic. And that goes the same for the CV4 technique. When you want to create a still point, you actually bring them into the most parasympathetic part by kind of accentuating that extension of the CRI system. And then you get them to that still point. And that's like where I think the most inner level of healing comes from. So yeah, I have my own kind of wacky theories about autonomics and healing, but yeah, they talk about that in their podcast too, which I love.
Definitely. I'm definitely going to check that out, because it's just interesting stuff. And you know, I, as we talked about, I want to go into sports as well. And there's an infinite amount of stuff you can learn. And that's really cool. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Definitely.
Here's another kind of non-related question. So one of my favorites is, when you were a kid, what did you get in trouble for?
Ooh, when I was a kid, what did I get in trouble for? Probably like drawing on stuff that I'm not supposed to draw on. So I would like draw on my backpack, draw on my like binder thing, like draw on the walls when I was really little. I found out that was bad really quick. But yeah, I would just like put art kind of everywhere. Like I didn't really distinguish like, oh, I shouldn't draw on that. Or it was just, and at a certain point, my mom was just like, all right, you do whatever you want. Like it's your backpack. But it was just like stuff like that. What else? Nothing too bad. I was a pretty good kid, pretty well mannered. Maybe for being quote unquote like oppositional, like I'm always pretty independent, so to speak. So my mom was like, you gotta, you know, finish your toast or something. I'd be like, no. And she'd be like, see, you're just kind of like disobeying me just to do it. But, you know, it is what it is. She was a child psychiatrist. So, she definitely was psychoanalyzing me for sure, but you know, that's I hilarious. Came out okay. So, yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I mean, it turned out well, though. I mean, you became an artist, you
Yeah,
know?
yeah,
Well,
you know, there
and a
you go.
physician, but you know, the artist part too.
Yeah, combo of both.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, I used to get in trouble for I used to like break furniture a lot on accident because like
Nice.
I used to think that I was a Power Ranger and like a Ninja Turtle, so I would like do the
WWE.
Oh yeah, man, I would do like
Yeah.
acrobatics and stuff, and I actually fell through a window one time. I was trying to do a handstand
Oh,
and
jeez.
I hit the handstand on top of the couch and I just kept going forward and I actually fell through the window. So
Oh,
that
no.
was my mom was like crying and yelling, and then once I got, you know, once everything was over and I calmed down, got a good ass whooping. So like
Yeah,
that's
right.
what you
Yeah.
get, you know, that's
You
what you
learn
get.
real quick.
Yeah. I didn't learn. You know, I was just hard headed like
Yeah.
that. So
Yeah,
I got immune to the ass whooping pretty quick, but I got like
right.
then she started hitting me elsewhere, like taking money and, you know, making me do extra chores. So I that
Yeah,
straightened me
get the
up.
other
So
punishments in, yeah.
exactly, yeah, that's funny. So another question is, if you could pick anyone to narrate your life, who would it be?
Oh man. Well, I mean, first person was I thought it was Morgan Freeman for obvious reasons, but
Obvious, yeah.
let's see if it wasn't Morgan Freeman, narrate my maybe David Attenborough too. I mean, they're
Oh
both
yeah.
legendary narrators, right? So
Oh yeah.
I like to imagine like a nice soft British accent, perhaps.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I've always thought like what would the world be like if Morgan Freeman had a British accent?
Oh man, that's like that actually would be my choice. There's a David Attenborough kind of English accent with Morgan Freeman's, you know, vocal tone. That would
Yeah,
be ideal.
that'd be pretty awesome. I think
Yeah.
I usually say I've done this, but I ask this question a lot, and I've said various things, but Bruce Lee would be one. He's like one of my idols. But
Oh yeah.
I think a really fun one that I just kind of thought of would be like if I could have James Franco and Seth Rogen together narrate my life, that would be
Oh, that'd
sweet
be
too.
pretty funny.
Yeah, that'd be
Kind
pretty
of
fun
like
too.
what was that show? It's like Science Theater 3000 or I forget the name of the show, but they like it's like you're watching someone watch a movie and they're commenting on it, so to speak.
I've
I don't
never
know.
heard of
It's
that. That sounds awesome.
yeah, it's like an old school like show on sci-fi or something. Anyway, someone out there might know it.
That sounds sweet. Yeah.
It's
That's
funny.
awesome. Well, what about this? If you were locked in a room and for the rest of your life, you could only pick five movies, at most five movies to watch, what would be some of the movies you could watch over and over again?
Okay, so first one would be Kung Pao. It's probably my favorite movie of all time. That's like a movie that I test people on. So like, you know, my fiance now, back then, you know, girlfriend, our first the night I asked her to be my girlfriend, this is like 4 years ago, we watched Kung Pao and I wanted to see if she loved it, and she was like, yeah, it wasn't bad. It was funny. I was like, okay, do you want to be my girlfriend now? So that would be the first one. Then it would be probably Napoleon Dynamite. I've also watched like maybe 100 times plus. It's just a
That's a good
classic.
one.
Like I love how awkward and weird it is, and it's like in the middle of nowhere, but it's like present day, but somehow it's like the 70s at the same time.
That is a good one.
So those two. What else? I mean, I love The Matrix. Like I think about, you know, The Matrix, how it actually correlates to our lives now in a lot of ways, which is pretty crazy. Just to see like, you know, correlates with technology and like different dimensions and control. And there's a lot of crazy, you know, things in terms of the behind the scenes look, so to speak, of like reality that I think about. So The Matrix would be one. What else? I'm trying to think of other really good ones I saw lately. Yeah, those are all I can think of now, but those would probably be my like top three that I would say.
It's funny because Matrix is definitely on my list too, and I cheated. I wrote mine out ahead of time because you know I get to do what I want, you know. But so Matrix was mine. I said Kill Bill,
That's a good one.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number two, The Secret of the Ooze. I don't know if you remember
Oh,
that one from
nice.
childhood.
No,
That one,
I
I
haven't.
still watch that like all the
That's funny.
time. And then The Matrix, and then it was a tie between like a three-way tie between like Goodfellas, Dark Knight, and then the new movie Joker.
Oh, I saw Joker recently, actually. That one was in I mean that just the acting Joaquin Phoenix is like kind of creepy actually, how he could act so like deranged and somehow still be a real person who's like just an actor. But like, I was like, he seriously seemed like out of his mind, which is kind of freaky. But I mean, you could see why he won the Academy Award, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a freak show. I mean, it was an awesome movie though. I loved it, and it really made you think about, mental illness
Yeah.
and, just kind of like how fragile
'Cause you
society is too.
feel for him. You're like, yeah, I mean, what he's saying isn't true in a lot of ways, you know? Like, granted, he went about it kind of violently, but like, that could be just what happens if you're in the system like that and if you're treated that way. So, yeah, it makes you think.
He was violent, but he was fair. He didn't hurt anyone that had been good to him along the way. So
Right.
it's interesting.
True.
Yeah, man. It's
Yeah.
interesting. So yeah. Well, we have if we got locked in together, man, we'd have 10 solid movies to pick from, so that'd be good.
Oh yeah, I'd have no problem watching those either.
Exactly. That's funny, man.
Sounds
So
good.
yeah, man. So, well, we've been talking for a hot minute. We had that little bit of an interruption there in the middle, but how do you feel about doing the wrap-up questions and getting you out of here?
Yeah, sounds great. I'm down.
All right, sweet. So the first I ask four questions to all my guests, and take as long as you want to flesh them out, whatever, and then we'll go from there. So the first question is, has practicing medicine been what you expected?
Not even close. Like, we all have these preconceived notions when we apply to medical school, what we think a doctor is, who we know that are doctors. Maybe it's our parents, maybe it's our friends, our family. But you can only find out that for yourself on your own journey. And you change, like, you really do change throughout undergrad, med school, residency. And now, in becoming an attending, I'm still changing, like even week to week, what my goals are, what I want to do, what I think is best. You do have, the constant things, of course, like, do no harm, do what's best for the patient, and all these things. But a lot of your kind of priorities change, your life changes, and so really it is not what I expected, but it is exactly perfect for me in this moment, which I'm very thankful for. So yeah, it's definitely an exploration.
Yeah, that's a sweet way to put it. It's like not what you expected, but it's like what you got is exactly what you
Yeah,
wanted.
the
That's cool.
universe works out in crazy ways you could never expect.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. So, and then the second question is, what are keys to success in medicine?
I think keys to success in medicine are to keep in mind you're a servant to the patient. Like in our culture and in many cultures, doctors are looked up to, as like pillars of society, people who make money, people who have great careers, success. But my grandfather always said to my mom when she was going through med school, like, remember you're actually a servant. It's not like in a demeaning way, but it's in a way that you need to be humble about, because at a fundamental level, your goal is to make an impact in someone's life in a positive way. And that's a privilege. Like, that's not something that people should, I mean, people do will thank you and they should thank you, but you should also be thanking your patient, because without your patient, you wouldn't be a doctor. So, that I think is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of professions, other besides healthcare, but definitely within healthcare, maybe forget that, the patient is the ultimate reason that we got into it. And it's a shame that that gets forgotten. And it's easy to forget, man, when you're stressed and you're tired and you're overworked, but it is something
Yeah,
that
you can
kind
get
of bring you
jaded real
back.
fast.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
That's why it's
So
important to find what for you is rejuvenating and not and doesn't burn you out, so to speak, because that's how we lose docs. So
Yeah. It's I'm on peds right now, and it's interesting 'cause like for me, I could never do it just because A, kids are not really my jam, but these sick ones that come in, man, these like, 4 week old, two 5 day old, and it's like they're critically ill. I just don't like it, man. It makes me sad, but
yeah.
that's what gets these attendings happy is treating them and getting them better, So
Right,
everyone
yeah.
got to find their balance, like you said.
Like, my mom's a child psychiatrist. I could never do that job in a million years. I don't know how she does, but she loves it and she's done it for 40 years, and is retired now, but like she found her calling, and you know, we're all trying to find our own too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I don't get is when people say they couldn't do sports med. It's like, what are you crazy? What do you mean you couldn't do?
Yeah.
Because that's the best
Right?
field, you
It's amazing. I mean, I agree, man. It's super
know?
cool. Like, but that's, I guess that's our brains working.
Yeah, maybe we're a little biased, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you're about to start your first, you know, quote unquote, grown up job. You've done
Yep.
residency and a fellowship together. You know, looking back to maybe current, you know, interns and residents and even medical students or pre-med all the way back, what is your advice to those people coming up?
I would say listen to yourself, listen to your heart and your gut. Like people are going to tell you things, people are going to try and steer you in different directions for their own motives. People are going to maybe talk down on what you want to do. But really, I mean, it's your life and you have to stick to what you think is best for you and what makes you happy and most fulfilled. I think there's a lot of kind of appeasement going on nowadays with like, oh, like it looks cool if I'm a surgeon, or you know, I just want money to pay off my debt and maybe get a really nice car, da da da, and then I'll be burnt out, but whatever. But I mean, it's all about your priorities, what kind of doctor you want to be, who you want to help, and your talents that you can cultivate to do that to the maximum potential. And people don't know that for you. You have to know that for yourself. And the only way you figure that out is through exploration and trying things and failing at things. So don't be afraid of failure, because some of your biggest failures will jumpstart some of your greatest successes. So life is just this big cycle that we're all going through, and that, you know, will end at some point. So you have to make the most of each step in your journey, because that builds upon each prior step. And just be thankful for the moment that you're in every day, and just keep on going and stay true to yourself.
Absolutely, man. And you know, unfortunately for you, you just said something that would be like a sweet, like bumper sticker or t-shirt or whatever. And I'm totally gonna coin that as a Our
Yeah,
Lives
you
in
can
Medicine
take
thing.
it.
So
It's all good.
no, I'm just joking, man. I'd have to
You
put
can
Dr.
take
Alex King in quotations if I did that,
Yeah, that's all good.
I definitely didn't get into this to steal people's ideas, so
That
I could never do that.
would
But
be pretty smart.
that's an awesome cue though, man. Like, you know, just your biggest failures can launch your biggest successes. I think that's so true, and you have to
Yep.
have that mindset of being willing to learn from a mistake for that to be true though. So gotta have the open
Yep,
mind
for
and
sure.
be ready. So that's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. And the last question is, if you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old and you had to do everything over again to get to where you are today, would you do it all over again?
I would have to say 100% yes. And you know, it's tough because like every little thing that happens to you brings you to where you are now. I'm just thankful that where I'm at now is some place that I want to be, and that I'm happy to be in. You know, I have a healthy family, healthy relationships, great career. I'm very blessed, and I'm just thankful for, you know, everyone that put me in the position to take advantage of opportunity and to have the privilege to help people. So I would absolutely not change a single thing.
Sweet, man. I love to hear that.
Yeah.
I have yet to hear a no, so I'm happy about that. So that's good. That's
That is
good.
good. That's a good sign.
Yeah, and you know, maybe one person kind of wanted to say no, but it was with the sense of they would go like invent Google. And I was, no, you can't do that. You can't
Yeah,
do that.
right.
It's either do it all over again or you could stay in
Yeah,
or nothing. So
just keep a list of all the lotto numbers and then
yeah.
just go back in your set.
Exactly. That's not really fair because if you do that, I mean, how many people would go to med school, you know? It's like
I know, right? Like
if I hit
no
the
one, right?
$500 million jackpot, I probably wouldn't go to med school, but maybe. I
Right,
don't know.
but if I did that, you know, I would be bored out of my mind, probably on my fifth jet ski, just
That's
being like,
true.
what now, right? So I
That's
think
true.
to some extent, you know, people are like, oh, it's tough. Residency's tough. Being a doctor's tough. But it's kind of the story of your life and your existence. So it's like if you're making difference in people's lives and making them physically and emotionally, spiritually feel better in their existence, to me, that's like the coolest thing of all time. You're like helping the universe heal itself in a way, which is, you know, pretty metaphysical, but that's how I feel. And not a lot of people get to do that, so.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, it's a good healthcare worker is life changing and life, you know, a lifelong memory. You know, I remember when I was hospitalized as a kid for, you know, when I was younger, I still remember the doctor that took care of me. And it's like that, you know, that shows, I mean, I was like eight. So I don't remember much from being eight, but I remember that. So
And the way I think about it too, is like, I always like to think of like the anthropology of medicine back in, you know, ancient times whenever we were living in like, let's say a village of 100 people, like there was probably one medicine man, one shaman for the village, and they were probably like one of the pillars of their society and super important for everyone in the village and everyone, you know, who associated with them and on a spiritual level too. And that's something I think we're missing just because of the crazy mass, you know, population and culture and this modern kind of civilization. But like, that's something I almost want to bring back in a way, is like find your tribe and really be a pillar of that tribe and do the best to help the community. Even like, I've been trying to do more volunteer work and things like that too. So I'm trying to bring that back because I think it's super important for healing and just for kind of showing, you know, how doctors can help more people.
Absolutely, man. Well, I love it. And I think, if I can ever make it up north, I'll definitely have to hit you up.
Yeah. If you're ever in Philly, you know, where to find me.
We'll get a workout in and we'll complain about the air bike together and that'll be sweet.
Yeah, I can give you some acupuncture for sure.
Oh, see, I'm done. I'm ready now. Sweet, man.
Yeah, book that flight.
I'll wait till COVID dies down.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's probably smarter.
Or I'll just wait till it respikes and then the prices are cheap and I'll just full hazmat.
Yeah, you know, and all just the be the there. Only one on your plane. Yeah.
Yeah. Respirator, full hazmat, and I'm good to go.
Private jet.
Yeah, exactly. That's the move. So. Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for being a guest and, you know, sharing your experience with us. I really appreciate it and really enjoyed your story.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Can't wait to hear your other episodes. Cool. And if there's anything you need, just message me. All right.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for being a guest again.
Yeah. All right, Everett. Talk to you soon.
All right, Dr. King. Have a good one.
All right, man. You too.
Right, see ya. Bye. That was Dr. Alex King. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the episode. And to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.